Right, so this talk is about models of mantle plumes and the interaction with spreading ridges and lithosphere thickness variations. And in the case of Iceland, the motivation was kind of that Iceland is considered a plume, but it doesn't have something like a classical hotspot track like you see for Hawaii. Instead, like around 60 million years, volcanism in widespread locations. For example, one location being Disco Island on west of Greenland, another one, Giant's Causeway in Northern Ireland. So they have all been associated with the Iceland plume. And even if you reconstruct the plates into the place where they were 60 million years ago, they're still, the locations are far apart. And then, of course, you can just say it must have been a very big plume head, but we wanted to go a little bit further and study a more realistic case to see what we can say about it. So we included a realistic lithosphere thickness model. We included plate motions on top with spreading ridges and large-scale mantle flow to see how much of this, or how we can explain this distribution of volcanics. And this is work we've been done, among others, in collaboration with Eva, René, and Juliane. And we originally, we developed this workflow for the Tristan hotspot. And we have used it by now for Reunion and Kerguelen, and those three plumes that have been published, and so that's why I think you can read it up in the papers. And because I have only 25 minutes, I'd like to focus on Iceland this time because this hasn't been published yet. Another plume we looked at is Hawaii, but this is not yet in a far enough advanced stage that I can talk about it. So that's why Iceland. Now, before we look at these upper mantle models, is a bit of an aside that I will talk about why we think Iceland is a low mantle plume. And this goes really back to some earlier models I did together with von Torsvik. And other people like René have done more sophisticated models which show similar things, which shows how when you impose plate motions and subduction on top, so you have slabs dropping into the mantle. So here is a cross-section, for example. And here is a map view showing the slabs, essentially the steps of where the slab is. Is here a bit higher, here a bit lower. You would show this as color here. So this is where essentially you see where the slabs are and where the thermochemical material from the lowermost mantle gets pushed to. So you get these two large piles in the Pacific and Africa. And because the slabs push the thermal boundary layer to the sides of these piles, then at the side of the piles, the plumes develop. And interestingly, it's not only at the side of the piles, but they tend to mostly develop like when there are sharp corners, because then you have like two slabs from both sides. And, oh, sorry, yeah. Right, you have two slabs from both sides, then you tend to have this at the corners. Now, for Iceland, there is one plume here at the northern corner of this African pile, and you also see that it kind of doesn't look plume-like. So that's another thing to keep in mind, that in some of these models you get more sheet-like upwellings. Now, this is the modeled pile. This plume here is a bit too far south compared to Iceland, which is here. But if you look at the tomographic cluster analysis here from the paper of Plekic et al., you see that actually this pile might stretch right up to here. So Iceland sits really at the northern edge of this pile. So it is a predestined location for a mantle plume to form. Just to illustrate this process, I have a short video in the next. So this is just, you have slabs sinking here, and this is very low resolution, but they pile up the thermochemical pile, and then at the margin this plume develops. And one thing you notice is that this tends to be tilted, so the base of the plume is closer to the center of the large low shear velocity provinces or the piles than the top of the plume. And since we have this slamology group here, I compiled in the next figure, I compiled I put together the surface location and where they see the source of the plume, and then also where in my numerical models from my earlier papers, which I did with Maria Antretter, and then in a paper with Lapo Bosti and Thorsten Becker, we computed in a more simplified way the location of the plume sources. And you see, at least for Iceland, it's both the modeled and the observed plume source locations are south, so closer to the center of the pile. For other plumes, it also works kind of, like for Hawaii, they are both south. For others, it doesn't work as well. Like for example, that's A source. So the model plume source location is always sort of displaced to the center of the pile. So in this case, the center of the African LLSVP, which is shown here as outline of the S mean 1% minus 1% contour of S mean. And the reason why we choose this is because this is a contour where the sharp gradients are on. So anyway, this plume source location is always tends to be displaced towards the center of the pile. In the observation, it seems like kind of the general trend also, but some cases like A source, it's the opposite way.
How are the observations determined?
I just took it from the list, so maybe somebody who compiled that list can comment on that. Was that you? No. Slamology, that's the list on the plume source locations, yes.
The
hotspot source locations. You somehow visually trace them, the plumes from the surface to the co-mantle boundary, and then determine whether.
We use some UCB model. Model to trace the hotspot, trace the face of the plume.
Okay,
boundary.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there's lots of uncertainties of the locations.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know. Okay, so that was sort of an aside which was just motivated by what has been done here. And now coming back to Iceland, as I said, there is no classical hotspot track and widespread volcanism around 60 million years. So just to show it again in a reconstruction from 60 million years ago, this is the reconstructed plume locations, and you get volcanism here in Disco Island and then all the way down to Ireland. So this was kind of the motivation to see whether we can reconstruct it or whether we need maybe more than one plume or maybe this kind of sheet-like upwelling, which we haven't done yet. Right, another point.
Yes. On this part, it looks like all of the volcanism has moved away to the south from the original plume location.
Yeah.
Is that what's happening?
That's at least qualitatively, I will show you can explain that move, that it's displaced to the south because it's where the regions of thin lithosphere are. So towards the north, it's all thick lithosphere. So qualitatively, and also in some of some models, not exactly in the right location, but there tends to be more volcanism towards the south, yes. So another part of the story which I'm trying to come up with is based on seismic tomography. And so that is actually, that work goes to back to a visit by Sergei Lebedev coming to Potsdam, and he showed me those tomography images they have. And because it looks like if you look at the S wave velocity, you have high velocities both at 100 kilometers, at 150 and at 110 kilometer depths in the south and the north. You still have high velocities compared to global average across Greenland, but less high, and the same here. And this kind of looks like one idea we had is that the plume thinned the lithosphere, and this causes a thin lithosphere across here, that basically the plate moved over the plume and caused this thin lithosphere. So that's the second part of the story. And you can also you can use those tomography to infer lithosphere thickness. So the way our method to do this is we assume a reference temperature profile, and we convert the seismic velocity anomalies into temperature anomalies, and then convert from at the temperature anomalies to the reference profile, and we get the actual temperature profile, and we say at a certain temperature, this is where we define our lithosphere base. So in this way, from the tomography models, we can infer lithosphere thickness, and it's kind of, well, it's quite a robust feature, so basically where you have the lower velocities, you get thinner lithosphere, and again, you see this channel of thin lithosphere going across Greenland, which is not quite as thin here, but it's still, you can imagine that it's thinner. It's also a bit of you have to choose the color scale, right, to see it properly, because if you choose the wrong color scale, then it's actually the variations are not that large there between it. Right. Okay. Yeah, just showing you again the plate reconstructions, this classical plume track, which you don't see, but which you might see from the tomography, would be created is by moving Greenland over the plume. So this is the plume location, and you might see it's not exactly fixed. It's also moving slightly, and it's based on a global moving hotspot reference frame developed by Dubrovin and myself and Trond Torsvik. So yeah, just let it move now. So I guess it's simple enough. So that's how the plume then creates the hotspot track. And this is the, when we compare this with the tomography image in the next figure, and we see it matches quite well. So that's the second part of the story. So now we thought of how can we put this together. We have plume volcanism here and here around 60 million years. At 60 million years, the plume would be here. But we assume that the plume has pre-existed, but there was no volcanism before. So kind of the story we thought of and which we then tried to model numerically is that perhaps there was a plume earlier, but because it hits the lithosphere, like here at 60 million years, the lithosphere hasn't thinned yet because the Baffin Island and Greenland was close together. So there was thick lithosphere here, the plume was here for a long time, and the thick lithosphere couldn't reach anywhere to the surface. So material accumulated below the lithosphere, and then it finally, spreading started here and here, and you get volcanism on both sides, which would also mean that the plume, the large igneous province does not necessarily correspond to the arrival of the plume head. So the plume could have just accumulated material for a long time, and then when the spreading started, it just came up. But in our model, we just imposed the plate motions. Of course, in reality, that would be the next step. There would be some feedback between the plume maybe weakening the lithosphere and causing the spreading to start. But we have just kinematically imposed. Now, before we come to the more scientific or the numerical model part, I want to show this video, which my daughter made for a term. Now for a third-year project at Emily Carr University, and hope you like this one. Watch.
Iceland is today's ultimate travel destination, with its beautiful waterfalls and lagoons, volcanoes and glaciers. But what makes Iceland so special? Is it the sights, the culture, or the relaxation? It can be any of those, but it's also the geophysics behind its creation. This is the Earth on the surface, but what if we could look on the inside of the planet? If we could, we would see movements in the Earth's mantle. Much like a lava lamp, hot material closer to the core rises towards the crust and sinks again when it is cooled down. Patterns are generated within the movement, which enhances the flow of the mantle material. The mantle pulls the crust material above it, which creates plate tectonics. There are different types of plate collisions, which happen when two plates cross paths. One example is a subduction zone, which also means one plate is pushing itself over the top of the other. In this case, the crust which is underneath the other starts sinking towards the core because of the types of materials. So the material sinks to the core. Which starts to rise quickly when some of the crust material is gone. These tiny pipes of hot and cutting material are called hotspot plumes. The plume hits the crust and bursts out of the volcano. The crust, however, is still moving, being pulled by its own sinking material, so a volcano chain can materialize. An example of a standard hotspot like this would be Hawaii. What is it that actually makes Iceland so different? Iceland is located over the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, so it may seem to originate from mantles filling up from the ridge. However, it has long been suspected that Iceland is thought of as a hotspot because of its thick crust, heat, and the strong volcanic activity. But
hotspot track like Hawaii. Because land on Earth was still Pangaea, parts of the crust are thicker than others. If we say this is Greenland, this is America, and this is Eurasia, we can picture a hot spot hitting Greenland, and then spreading out and rising to the thinner lithosphere, accumulating that. When America splits off to the west, some underwater volcanoes appear here. Volcanism on the eastern side of Greenland due to the hotspot. The Mid-Atlantic Ridge forms in the Atlantic Ocean where the tear between the continents had occurred. The hotspot just happens to be in the general area and spills up to the ridge. The hotspot material flows out and creates an island where the crust becomes especially thin. Because the plates are still moving apart from each other, the island slips and more individual volcanoes form in the Rift Valley Ice. One plume can create volcanism in two isolated regions simultaneously following this method. And different from volcano chains, which form in the interior of the plate, Iceland forms and grows at the Mid-Atlantic Ridge.
Okay, that voice was not my daughter, I think. Somebody else. Okay, I didn't. Okay, yeah, so maybe now it's kind of maybe the rest is not quite as fun, but I think we still have a few minutes, I can show that. So that's the model setup which we used is we use Aspect, which you probably all have heard about in the past few days. We use, this is not a standard version of Aspect, so it's kind of a side branch which we're using. So that what we have done can actually at the moment cannot be done with the standard version. So we use a 3D model box, Cartesian model box. So we side of sort of we convert the spherical coordinates into Cartesian coordinates. And we impose a plume influx and temperature anomaly at the base. Then we prescribe plate motions in the top, essentially in the uppermost 200 kilometer of the box, according to this global plate motion reference frame, which I just showed you before. And elsewhere, the velocities and boundaries at the boundaries are prescribed from a global mantle flow model. The lithosphere thickness is prescribed initially, and where material moves into the box, otherwise developing self-consistently. So I've shown you this reconstruction of lithosphere thickness of 60 million years of the model starting at 120 million years. We essentially rotate the present-day lithosphere thickness back to 120 million years, and then we model the model forward, which means that at the present day, we don't end up exactly at the same lithosphere thickness as we have present day, or we start with a backward advection because we also thin and thick it at some point, but it's still it comes out more or less similar. And yeah, just some more model specifications is that viscosity is temperature and depth dependent, and we use a dehydration rheology, and there is batch melting of anhydrous peridotite, and melt is immediately extracted to the surface. So we don't only model what a plume would like, so that we have melting, and this then we add this up to get the total amount of melt at a certain place, and we can compare this then with where we have volcanism observed. So this is now the scientific movie of the. We start the plume at shortly after 120 million years, and you'll see that. Okay, let me stop it. So blue means there is some isocontour. I don't remember what it was, but just to show that the plume had rising. And as long as it's blue, that means there's no melting occurring, right? And when it gets colored, then it means there is some melting occurring. And this.
That is Greenland.
This is the plate boundaries of Greenland. Yes, I didn't show the coastlines, but this corresponds to the plate boundaries of Greenland at 105 million years. When it wasn't, it basically at that time it corresponds to the continental area. Yes, later on it grows. So, and green arrows are the plate motions, which look a bit erratic sometimes. But then, yeah, blue is the plume, and you see it develop then. Oops, sorry. So here the plume head arrives, and then first it spreads in this, where it spreads between Greenland and North America, and only later you get Greenland moving over it. You get kind of this corridor of material which corresponds to the seismic tomography, and then you get it captured by the ridge, and you get all this a lot of melting then in the Atlantic in this model. Right, so here, when you come closer to the present, you get a lot of melting around Iceland. And get a very, the plume head is always very big in this model. Right, then just showing some pictures, still images, again to illustrate what happens. That 68 million years, you have plume material here in the west. You have this corridor across Greenland, and then this is, you don't see it very well, but the actual plume sits here now. So you get eruption then later on after 60 million years, and this is material that has been left here because it was spreading underneath the lithosphere and being left here, and then only later on around this time spreading occurs, and you get volcanism here in this region. You don't see it here because it does not occur on this isocontour, so it's still blue. But at the same time, you get volcanism on the east coast of Greenland. So from above, again, at 68 million years, you get still all this plume material here in the west. You get this corridor across, and no, not much volcanism yet. But at 59 million years, it has disappeared across Greenland, and now you get volcanism on the east coast. So just to show how this develops with time, so this is... Again, the lithosphere thickness moving over Greenland, and this is then where the melting occurs. It's not exactly where the plume is, but the material flows from the plume to thin lithosphere, and then I track the accumulated melt. So this is now the cumulative melt. It has been created somewhere else, but it moved with the plate motions to where it is right now. So just show it once again. Right, so the plume is here still under Greenland, but it's also melting. And then you see that there is also from this leftover material, you get some melting here at a location which is quite far from the actual plume location at that time. So then, yeah, in this way, I construct these models of thickness of crust. And this is a model of crustal thickness from, I think it's... Nick Kuznir, and you can kind of compare it. There are some features which look quite similar, like you have thick crust here along the continental margin. Here also, this kind of corresponds to the Iceland-Greenland ridge. This corresponds to the Iceland-Barrow ridge, but this corresponds to Jan Mayen microcontinent, which might also be continental material, but I mean, in there's certainly a lot of differences, and you, with some goodwill, you can. But with some goodwill, you can see some similarities. Also, then we look at the volcanism at different times. Like this is the model where the plume starts in 64 million years. You get a volcanism at the margins here, and we compare this with where it actually occurs at these times, and. This is a model which starts at 115 million years, and after 55 million years, the two models are kind of similar, so we only show the one at 150 million years, which has some volcanism here at the west of Greenland, and then some here in the plume-related in Labrador, and all along the margins of the North Atlantic, and then it gets more focused towards Iceland later on in time. Now, you might notice that most of our volcanism occurs in the ocean, so that's one of the major drawbacks of our model still, which we think of how we fix it, that the actual volcanism occurs more on the continents, but in our case, we get everything moving towards thin lithosphere, which helps explaining that material spreads between thick lithosphere, but that it actually does occur on the continent. So that's something we're thinking of how to improve the model eventually. Right. So this is a conclusion. For one thing, it's the model works to explain widespread Cenozoic volcanism in the North Atlantic Greenland region. And to explain volcanism west of Greenland at 60 million years, you need to have the plume either much older or you need to have it located inland beneath Greenland. Otherwise, if you have it always at 60 million years starting and beneath the Atlantic, you don't get it across to the west of Greenland. The region of thin lithosphere helps to explain the plume-related volcanism all the way to Ireland. Maybe I need to go back to explain this. Yeah, this is like the reconstruction in 60 million years. So we have these regions of thin lithosphere. So qualitatively, this can explain that plume material is more likely to flow southward rather than northward. But in our model, still most of the quantitative model, most of the volcanism actually occurs along the ridge, and it doesn't flow so much into the continent. So yes. What else? Here I was. Yes. Plume may have pre-existed prior to the first pulse. So I think that is a kind of a surprising result, which we find that a plume. The flood basalt does not necessarily correspond to the first arrival of the plume, but there could be some material accumulating and it just stayed underneath the lithosphere until finally it found its way out. There is still some source for caution that we get our plumes always moving, the material always moving towards the ocean, but we need to implement some mechanism for realistic lithospheric erosion from below, but that's because we don't have, we don't properly model how the melt penetrates through the lithosphere. So we just have melting and then we immediately extract it to the surface. So that's something which would certainly complicate the code a lot more. And it's already very slow, so that's maybe a problem. And if the plume existed before 60 million years and the passage of Greenland over, it can explain this east-west corridor, which is observed by seismology. Thank you.
Question. Yep. So your model predicts volcanism in the oceans.
Yep.
And I guess I'm curious why you think it didn't occur that way in reality. I understand you can observe that it didn't, but you look at like Hawaii chain, for example, the islands are fairly close to each other. So wouldn't you expect a similar thing behind?
Hawaii was always below the ocean, so I think then that lithosphere was always thin enough so that it could go through. That was actually a question which we wanted to make sure that with a more standard plume like Hawaii that we get a more or less continuous chain. And so that was the reason for this Hawaii models which we have started. And turns out that it also when it's close to the spreading ridge, then still the material tends to flow towards the ridge, which is, and we don't get so much continuous volcanism, but it is still, when it gets further away from the spreading ridge, then you get volcanism at more or less directly above the plume. Not as much as we would want, but some of it is. But, the reason why we think we don't get it at the continent is probably because there may be smaller scale processes which you can model in 2D. Like there is a paper by Stefan Sobolev and others how to model the lithosphere erosion due to a plume. And our model is 3D, so perhaps we don't get really these smaller scale processes right. So I don't know, maybe some other people have some different ideas on this. So, was more questions? Yes. You want to go first?
Sure. Yes. Could you clarify what you said about not being able to punch through the lithosphere when to initiate the visual volcanism? Is it that we don't know the physics yet, or is that we haven't been able to incorporate the physics into the package efficiently yet? The last thing you said, the last caveat of initiation of volcanism.
Yeah, that we. perhaps we don't have all the physics included yet. But I mean, what we certainly don't have included is how the melt propagates through the lithosphere. So we just have melting, and then we extract everything immediately to the surface and pack it on top. And then from there, we just move it with the plate motion. So that's very much simplified. And probably this process of melt going through the lithosphere would heat up the lithosphere and maybe erode it, make it thinner, and make it. But of course, you would have to somehow start the whole process, because at the first you have a thick lithosphere and no melting occurs, and then nothing could thin the lithosphere. So that's what we have right now in the model, that the plume hits the thick lithosphere and then it doesn't come up, which helps to explain this widespread volcanism. But then it turns out that a widespread volcanism still does occur on the continent, in the continental region in Greenland, but not only in the oceans. Yes.
But sort of following up on that, I was a little confused about the east-west corridor. I probably missed something.
About the east-west what?
This east-west corridor beneath Greenland.
Yeah, right.
So is it moving that way because of the pre-existing lithospheric sort of topography?
Well, that
it gets channeled down that.
Yeah, that's one thing we thought, that it could be that that it pre-existed, and that's why. Yeah, let me go back to. To this one, yeah. So you could think that the plume somehow was here and it pre-existed, and it started here. This thin lithosphere pre-existed, and that's why material moved to here. Volcanism occurred here and then here also on this side. But the other possible explanation is that where you didn't have it pre-exist, but the plume originally impinged in this region, and then Greenland moved over it. And so by the way of Greenland moving over the plume, you get this thin lithosphere corridor. But that's actually something which is not yet part of our numerical model. So we didn't try to reproduce that the plume thins the lithosphere appropriately. Again, because of this problem that this plume lithosphere interaction is probably needs to be improved upon.
Roberta?
Yep.
Do you know that there's no volcanism in that corridor? Isn't it all covered in ice?
Yeah, exactly. You don't know.
So there could be.
There could be, yes, right.
We'll know in a few years.
You mean there will be drilling?
I wonder, in terms of the petrological and geochemical record of that volcanism, are there trends? Is say in terms of the depth of melting and things like that that are consistent with that progression you would expect? Is there sort of this mix where you need a bit of hot plume plus the decompression melting that's happening in the ridge, right? And you would think that there should be some signature that's consistent with the temporal evolution. Mm-hmm. Is there?
Yeah, that's something I should look into. I don't know the answer. No, but I know that. That definitely all of these plume materials here and also in Ireland have been somehow associated with the Iceland plume. So I think geochemically that association has been made. So I didn't dream that up. But the other thing,
the depth of melting or inferred melting temperatures.
Now that's something we should look into. Yes, we haven't done that yet.
Okay, I wonder if we can just press on, perhaps. Anything that would you? Bernard, why don't we thank you again. Okay.